If there's anything you can learn from researching your family's history, is that it's a long and complicated process. You can move from branch to branch only to find that there's still more to learn. I found out that both my mother and my father's family trees meet at the same place in Cumbria, England, in the late 1300s, early 1400s. Sir Richard Musgraves was a knight who married Elizabeth Betham. Together, they had 10 children, of which 3 my family branches off from. Between this time and today, there is a ton of family gossip, ranging from secret children to marrying stepsisters. But when it comes to a critical lens, my family has a dark side. If I'm looking to the interesting facts behind my family, it definitely comes from my grandmother on my dad's side. I have a 12th great-grandfather, I think, if I counted it correctly, that's named Richard Warren, who came over on the Mayflower in 1620 from England, which is actually quite an accomplishment, I think, or very interesting to find. A year after his arrival, he brought over his wife, Elizabeth Walker, and their 5 children, one of whom is Sarah Warren, a descendant of mine who later marries a man named John Cook, who also came over on the Mayflower. Once over, they had 2 more children, making a total of 7. Richard Warren was one of the 41 people who signed the Mayflower Compact, being 12th in the list. He died in 1628, and his wife Elizabeth became the executor of her husband's estate, paying taxes, and was deemed an independent. He was buried at Burial Hill in Plymouth, and Elizabeth lived to be more than 90 and was buried also in Burial Hill. What I find somewhat fishy with this is that Elizabeth was labeled a widow in the majority of my research and had to be legally changed to be an independent in order to take care of her husband's estate, like being a minor now. While I do sadly see a lot of racism in my family's past, I think that sexism is probably one of the biggest issues that wasn't labeled as much. But I'm going to start off with racism. I have family fighting in both King Philip's War as well as the Pequot War. Pardon me if I pronounce that incorrectly. Both of these wars were against the Native Americans who lived there and forced them to either assimilate or die. The Pequot War went as far as almost wiping out the entire tribe, and my mother did research on my family's history as well, which is where I found a lot of my information. She did this about 5 to 10 years ago. In her research, she mentioned that John Cook, the man who came over on the Mayflower that I mentioned earlier, was a captain in the Pequot War. Now, in further research, I saw no evidence of this. There were a lot of Johns who were captains in this war, but I didn't find any John Cook from what I found. Even though he wasn't a captain, it was mentioned in my mom's research that he was very accomplished because of the many things he did for his community, including being a captain in this war. Now, my mother probably has never heard of this war and probably didn't intend to showcase one of its strengths, being a member of an army that almost wiped out a tribe. But when you look back on history, it just shows that someone may be a captain or a general or a soldier in a war, but it doesn't mention the effects this war had on other people, especially the ones who lost it. What I'm trying to say is that I had to go out of my way and go to different sources in order to see the truth behind this part of my family's past. Probably because he was a European male, I could not see that he was a captain. I could see that he was a captain, but for the same reason, I couldn't see the evil he did. And from a non-critical lens, such as the lens from my mom, she wasn't able to see that either. I'm not gonna lie, but I feel like this information is somewhat hidden to me. I know it's not. When my family did their ancestry research years ago, I was young and probably wouldn't find it unimportant, but I think it's crucial to know about your family's past. Going on with that, along the lines of race, I have another family member on my mother's side that was also questionable. There's a man in my family who was born in England in 1610. His name was Colonel James Cruz. He immigrated to Virginia where he became a merchant and a fur trader. Unfortunately, he had kept women as slaves, two of whom were of African descent and one of Native American. I think it was specifically Cherokee. In 1675, he and some other neighbors convinced a man named Nathaniel Bacon to help defend their colony against anticipated Native American attacks, even though it was definitely the Native American lands before theirs. This began the Bacon Rebellion. Now, this was not allowed at this time because James was captured and hung for treason and rebellion against the king and some other people of the group. And he was hung in Jamestown on January 26, 1677. Now, this James, he wasn't the best guy, of course, but there was speculation that he had a daughter named Hannah who wasn't white. And here's a little clip of me and my mom and my dad discussing this.
Via Ancestry.com, one of my old relatives, it was hung for the...
Bacon Rebellion.
The Bacon Rebellion. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very well documented case. So there's court records, and in those court records, he had a woman that was described as, I can't remember exactly how she was described, but
I think he just said Native American, possibly.
Yeah, she was described as a
different race.
Yeah, different race. Yeah. White, working in the home. And he left all of his money and everything to the little girl that lived in the house with them. And he would never admit that it was his daughter.
Oh, I gotcha.
Because if he admitted it was his daughter,
then he had relations with her.
Then he would have had to have had relations with this servant.
So it was illegal.
It was illegal
to have relations with someone of a different race.
Yes, it was illegal. It was against the law. Yes.
Who cares who you have?
And so he did not want to sabotage. Then his daughter would have a stigma if he ever admitted it.
Right.
Then, but what he did is, women couldn't inherit anything from anyone. So when he was hung, he wrote up his last will and testament, and he left all of his possessions to this girl's husband, young woman's husband.
Oh, okay.
And so speculation is he had no relation with this man at all, that this young woman had to have been his daughter. Why would he leave everything to this man?
Right,
and he left everything to this man so his daughter would get it.
Mm-hmm.
Within my mother's research, she found out that James Cruz left all of his money and estate to a woman named Hannah Cruz. This is the daughter of the Native American woman who is a servant of James, leading everyone to believe that she is his daughter. Now, I'm not 100% sure on this, and there's no official record, but there's a lot of evidence to support it. First of all, in my mother's genealogy, she is only 99% European, leading to be that there's 1% of her that is not. Also, the year that Hannah was born and her birthplace both line up with James's travels. Also, Hannah married a man named Giles Carter, where James officially left his money to him, since he could not officially give his money to a woman in that time, which is absolutely absurd, I might add. In James's will, he's forced to leave superficial objects such as blankets or a dining set or something of that nature to a woman, while if you leave an estate in money, it has to go to a male, or what is called the head of the household. I know that this was the idea at the time, and not everyone was complaining because some women like to be housewives, but just like how the Native Americans don't have a choice to keep their land, women don't have the choice to be anything but a housewife. This may be the way of life for women, but not all. It's great that we're in a time now where women are fighting for their right to do what they need, what they want to do. It just, we need to keep going, and it's still gonna be a long road until then. It's honestly kind of hard for me to see this. I feel as though in my education, specifically, I was hidden from certain things such as racial issues, but I feel like since I live in such a liberal area, a lot of people don't see it as a problem, but that's just not true. Since looking at my past and my family history, I know what not to do, and with my parents, I feel as though they are the first generation where it's becoming a norm to not see others through a sex or racial or other lens. Even though I think that it may be important to not pretend that race doesn't matter and everyone is the same and that whole idea, I really think that we should have to embrace and then accept our differences in order to understand each other more. In Sensoy and D'Angelo's Is Everyone Really Equal? In their book, they comment on in chapter 1 how people say certain things such as, I accept people for who they are, or I see people as individuals, or it's focusing on difference that divides us, and pretty much just seeing everyone not in a certain lens, but as their own person. They're all different. And what I really agree with that Sensoy and D'Angelo has commented on is the paragraph preceding that. They say, quote, while these options are deeply held and appear to be common sense truth and not opinion at all, they are predictable, simplistic, and misinformed, given the large body of research examining social relations. Yet the relentless repetition of these ideas in the mainstream makes them seem true and allow us to form strongly held opinions without being particularly educated on the issues. Indeed, we are members of a dominant group. Example, if we are male, white, cisgender, able-bodied, we will almost certainly have a superficial understanding because that is the primary message made available to us through mainstream society. Where we are members of minoritized groups, such as, example, if we are women, peoples of color, transgender, people with disabilities, we may have a deeper personal understanding of social inequity and how it works, but may not have the scholarly language to discuss it in academic content. So pretty much, if you're saying, I don't look at the color and I don't look at the differences, I only see a person for who they are and as an individual, you're somewhat degrading in a way the what makes them different. And that's not okay. As an educator in the future, I think it is extremely important to not look at people. Yes, it is important to see them as individuals, but also see them as individuals who have a culture, who have a different race, who have a different sexuality, because the more that you embrace that, the more understanding you will have of that child. Chapter 1 of Affirming Diversity only enhances this idea. In one of the subtopics on page 2, it says that multicultural education is inclusive of many differences, lenses of race, ethnicity, and language. It's not excluding those people because of their differences, but it's saying that you're including them because of their differences. You need to understand that who you teach, they are all different and they all deserve the same exact education. And understanding their differences, like I said before, will help you understand them more and also lead to a more positive and ethical and better classroom. I have the hardest time when it comes to racism and sexism with my family when it's only one or two generations off. It's not hard for me to believe that my family in the past were racist or sexist because Those were the ideals at the time, and also my family is almost 100% European. 100% on my mother's side and 99% on my father's side. And so I can definitely see the invasions and the racism and the sexism and the taking over of tribes and all that comes with that. But it's hardest for me to see it when it is my own grandparents. And I've been hidden from that for a very long time. Because I know that they were racist, but it wasn't brought to life to me until now. One generation can make such a difference. When I interviewed my parents, they commented on how racism and sexism was the social norm, and it may be strange for someone to be indifferent of that. But going back to my parents' generation and the changes they saw, my mother comments on how seeing her dad or my grandfather and his racism and sexism made her not want to be that way and how it influenced her current ideals. Not necessarily her ideals on how to treat people, but how to treat herself or see her own worth.
My father was racist and sexist.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in the privacy of his home, he would very clearly state how he was feeling. He called Hispanic people spicks. He called black people niggers. He called, I mean, in front
he used
of
all the derogatory
he
terms.
Used all derogatory terms. He also talked really poorly about women in general. Even though he had three daughters, he did that in front of us. And so I was brought up in a really, really quite racist home, when you think about it. Yeah. I didn't know it when I was a kid.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that until I got older. And then I started seeing other things, and I started to realize that I was brought up in a home that was pretty sexist and racist.
So how do you think that affects you when you were, like, now? Like, how do you think that's affected?
Well, it completely affected me. When I was in grade school, I was not good at math. Math was just not my cup of tea. And I can remember my dad trying to explain to me fractions, and he got the apple out and cut it in half, and, you know, two halves.
Yeah.
And the whole thing. But for some reason, it just wasn't connecting for me. And he just says, don't worry about this. You're a girl. You don't need to know any of this. I don't even know why they're teaching this to you. And so I was really brought up, you know.
So now you're starting to think, oh, I don't need to try it.
I don't
now.
Really need to try. That's exactly. It's all right. I'm a girl. Girls aren't good at math.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even need to really try at math. It's obviously, it doesn't come easy, and I'm not going to be able to learn it. So I was terrible at math.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I naturally wasn't gifted at math. But if I would have had someone that was more...
like me, I'm not naturally gifted at, honestly, a lot of subjects. I'm the type of person who I actually have to try. But Dad was really great at helping me. Like, geometry freshman year, I could not do it. And Dad studied with me every night and everything.
It hurts to see that my mother was influenced by oppression from her own father. Before college, I didn't see any sort of societal difference in my family because, quite honestly, we are white, upper-class Americans. This whole process has made me think about more than my own situations, but those are the people who influenced me. My mother and father are the strong, amazing people they are today because they notice these issues. The only difference to me is that I live in a supportive, loving family who help me when I need help and treat me the way I want to be treated. I'm blessed in a sense, but acknowledging that may not be the same for me in every situation in the future can help prepare me for later in life. Now, there's a huge difference between the male and the female in the family and their expectations. And when interviewing my dad, I came upon something that completely surprised me.
So mine was in, you guys were both in three kids or whatever, household and everything. Mine was all girls. Did you see anything?
Yeah.
Between the way you were treated versus Cynthia and stuff like that.
Night and day, yeah. So my dad's bar for my brother and I was significantly higher than my dad's bar for my sister. When I say bar, I mean his expectations for what, especially in high school and middle school, what my dad expected out of us boys was totally different from what he expected out of my sister. Now, he didn't help us that much. I don't remember my dad, and maybe I was just the youngest, and my dad was, and he was gone by the time I was 15, so I didn't really see it in high school that much anyhow. But even in middle school, he was never really that participatory in my education. He was doing his own thing and always did his own thing. But I could tell, you know, like I would see him. Even when my parents got divorced, I lived with my mom at first. And if I saw him, like his first questions were things like, you know, hey, how's school going? Are you getting good grades? You know, that kind of stuff. And the bar, the expectation level was completely different. Now, that's my point of view because I was the one being held to a higher bar. My sister's point of view might be completely different.
It's not. I've talked to your sister. No. Your sister has said to me that you're – parents, that your dad never encouraged her
to exceed
in anything but maybe getting married.
Yeah. So that gender role thing carried forward, obviously, passed just between my dad and my mom. It also rippled into my sister's lives. Now, my brother and I would say, you know, my sister was... what's the right word? Coddled a bit by my parents, like because, and I don't think it was because of the bar, but more of like, we saw a behavior out of my sister that had I done that, I would have got my ass kicked, like royally. And my sister got away with things that Paul and I never could get away with. And I don't think you, like for you've talked to Cynthia about it. I mean, that Cynthia was a wild child. She would do crazy things. And I did some crazy things too that I got, you know, I had serious repercussions for the things that I, you know, I'd go over to Johnny's house and spend the night on. I'd sneak out at night and we'd go in hoodlums at night and go TP someone's house or something. And the world would come down on my shoulders. But Cynthia would go crash with her boyfriend for 2 days and not show up. And nothing would happen to her. And I'm like, what the hell? You know, so I can think of a lot of very specific examples where the rules were not the same for my sister versus my brother and I.
So,
when I go back on these interviews with both my mother and my father, it's kind of hard because when you look back on family that you don't know and you see all the bad that they did, it doesn't affect you. But then when you look back on family such as your immediate grandparents and see the way they treated and your parents and all the social and cultural norms that were at the time and how they accustomed to them and they didn't fight them, it kind of hurts. And at the same time, I look at the way my parents were treated when they were young, and then I look at the way that I was treated when I was young, and I see that how my dad didn't have support, I had loads of support. How my mom was supposed to be a certain person, how I can be whoever I want to be. And it's very refreshing to see that because of the way they were treated, they didn't do the same to the next generation, to me and to my sister. And it gives me hope for the future. Relating this all back to education, I can't deny that my family was racist and sexist, but that also seems to make us stronger. By being aware of all the harsh things my family has said or did in the past has really helped me in figuring out how I want to treat my students when becoming a teacher. I can't speak firsthand for the majority of my students or my peers, but I feel as though public education is not preparing students for what is to come. Students of different races, cultures, sexes, and sexual preferences need to understand that they will all be treated differently because of their differences. In everyday education right now, if you're thinking the idea of, I will treat everyone the same, then you're not preparing them for the future. Now, these treatments can be negative, but some can be positive. In a teacher aspect, I plan to bring out the positive in my students' differences and not only accept them for who they are, but have all of my students accept them for who they are. While I find it important to read and understand Linda Christensen's Where I Am From for your students, it may actually be more important as an educator. Before this class, I didn't think that a social justice lens was so important in the classroom setting, and I had ideas of treating others equally or how you want to be treated, but it is way more important than you can imagine. After doing Where I'm From and the I Am From poems, I understand myself and my own ideas more. Doing the same for your students on what Christensen says, I invite students to write about their lives, about the worlds from which they come, end quote, is just as important. In Affirming Diversity, in Chapter 2 in Sonia Nieto's book, she talks all about multicultural education. She says that there are 7 basic characteristics for this education. It is that multicultural education is anti-racist education, is basic education, is important for all students, is pervasive, is education for social justice, is a process, and is a critical pedagogy. Because there are 7 basic characteristics, it is so much deeper than you can think. It says that these characteristics are basic, but they're not. They are so much deeper than you can imagine. In my classroom in the future, education to my students is way more than simply equal education opportunity for all. While that is important, it's just as important to make education unequal in the sense that you custom your teaching techniques and ideas to the needs of your students and their learning techniques, which are usually based off of their cultural values. In the end, after this whole assignment on researching my family and looking at it through a critical lens and this amazing class on multicultural education, I've better learned who I'm a person, who I am as a person, and who I want to be, which I think is a huge first step to being able to teach students of different cultures and backgrounds. Understanding who you are will help separate your ideas from the ideas of your students. Coming into this multicultural education class, I had one idea about multicultural education as well as my family. I believe my family's past to be racist because we were European. Simply put, I assumed. And multicultural education, I believed, wasn't a huge issue because I didn't see it as much. I was somewhat blind and hidden from all of these ideas. But all of this is so much deeper than I expected. And I could go so much further into depth on my family and our ideals. I saw that not only is there racism in my family, but there's also sexism, which is probably actually more dominant, especially in my most recent family in the past couple generations. After hearing about my grandparents and their ideas, it further helps me understand exactly what my parents don't do. They learned not to make the mistakes of their own parents or my grandparents because it made them feel diminished. They didn't feel like they had their own voice because of the social norms that were surrounding them, the ideas that my grandparents followed because they had to, and that they didn't fight against. Before all of this, I knew there were issues among a female when it comes to what is expected of them, but I didn't realize how much of an issue comes with being a male. I saw this a lot in my dad's interview, and thankfully, because my parents raised me the way they did, I feel as though I didn't see the sexism and racism, because my parents were great at showing me that they weren't sexist or racist. But that also did not prepare me for the future. It wasn't until college that I was able to see the truth behind my family and education, and I hope to bring the truth sooner than I learned to my own students. Thank you.